Welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Varsha.
And I'm Devin. And today on the pod, we have a big show today, a really big show.
Yeah.
We're going to start with my time at Comic-Con, which was really fun and kind of like a fun, light thing to talk about, because then we're going to talk about racism and immigration and the Trump administration, which I swear to God, I feel like a broken fucking record on this. Like, do we not talk about this on every one of our shows?
At this point, it's the theme of the administration. It's as if you're in a ninth grade English honors class and like, this is the most obvious theme you can write your essay on. This is basically
right?
It. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And then we're also gonna talk about this piece on Al Franken that was in The New Yorker, which, Varsha, it was so long.
And I had to like read this whole thing being like, I like this writer. This piece is going to get better. 8,000 words in, I'm like, no, I still like this writer. This piece is trash, but I still like this writer. It's going to get better. And still, no, it wasn't good. It was a very bad piece. Yeah. So I'm deeply disappointed. And we will talk about it.
Yes, we will. Yes, we will. So, yeah, big show. So let's jump right in. I am very excited to talk about Comic-Con because that's my favorite thing of the year. So,
is this like your second time or your third time?
This is my third time going, my second year as press. And it's so fun. I mean, I'm such a nerd. We talk about this on the show all the time. The show is like part politics, like part Harry Potter fan podcast, like... You know, I'm like very committed to it.
Were you there for the Natalie Portman as Thor reveal?
I was not. So, okay. So a little information for those uninitiated. There is something called Hall H, which people come in from all over the country and wait for days. They literally set up tents and wait in line overnight to get into a hall called Hall H. And that's where they do all the biggest panels. So this year, the big panel on Saturday was Marvel. And, you know, there were no details on what they were going to reveal, what they were going to talk about. And basically, like, that, like, you know, the hall holds, I don't know, probably 1,000 people, maybe 2. And, I mean, it was impossible to get into. And as press, I have access to Hall H via the press pit, where you stand so you can kind of, like, record and you know, for people reporting on these panels. And the only panel that I wanted to go to in Hall H was Entertainment Weekly's Women Who Kick Ass panel, because obviously that's really the one I'm most interested in. And the one right after that was the Marvel panel. And so actually me getting into the press pit for that panel was such a process. And like everyone yelled at me. They're like, you have to leave right after this panel. Like you can't stick around for the Marvel panel, all this stuff. And I was like, at this point, I don't even want to stay for the Marvel panel.
Fuck
like
you,
it's a
man.
Shit show. Jeez. Like, fuck you. And honestly, and they did reveal some super fucking cool stuff, like female Thor, you know, Jane, you know, more in, you know, Captain Marvel universe. I don't think they talked about Black Widow, but I do know that the swag was a Black Widow, like, baseball hat. So I definitely know that it was a really cool panel, but at the same time, it was such a shit show. And this actually segues nicely into my talking about the Women Who Kick Ass panel. So what it was is it was 5 female actors who work mostly in genre stuff. So it was Colby Smulders, Freema Agyeman, Shore Agdashloo, Betty Gilpin, and Jeri Ryan. So, and if there are any nerds in our audience, which I know there are, you will probably recognize all of those names.
Especially Freema. She was in Doctor Who.
She was in Doctor Who. Yeah, she was.
Oh my God, I love her. She was the only, she's the black character.
Yeah,
right?
She's
the her name. Martha.
Martha. Right? Martha Jones. And she's the only black companion. So, and she's amazing. Betty Gilpin is in Glow. Jeri Ryan was 7 of 9 on Star Trek. And she's coming back in Picard, the new Star Trek series.
So excited for Picard.
I know,
my God,
me too.
That commercial. I'm a huge Trekkie. Like, we haven't even talked about how much I love Star Trek on the show, and it's been a year and a half.
Oh, but... I know. It's so amazing. And then Colby Smulders was in How I Met Your Mother, but she was also in The Avengers, and she has a new show coming out. And then Shore is in The Expanse, and she's been in Hollywood for 43 years. I mean, she's originally from Iran. And she's got this really distinctive voice that if you like heard it, you would probably recognize it and you'd probably recognize her. Anyway, and they all play these really strong female characters. And actually, they talk a lot about the term strong female character and why in and of itself it's kind of a bullshit term in the industry. Mm-hmm. And they talk about sort of roles for women and women in media and all of that. And again, all of these roles that they play or they have played are really like strong, kick-ass women, right? As the panel would imply. But what I want to talk about first is the moderator, Sarah Rodman, actually acknowledged, because it was the panel right before Marvel, and she said, I know that most of you aren't here for this panel, right? I know that most of you are here for the panel that comes after. And you could even tell, like, the audience was restless and squirmy and, like, kind of loud and not really listening. And that in and of itself just pissed me right off, right? Me and one other person, we were the only two people in the press pit for this panel, whereas the press pit can hold like 30 or 40 people. Wow. So, I mean, it's just absolute bullshit. And it's just really difficult that, you know, even as people are saying, oh, there's more roles for women, and there are, but there's still not that many. And there's really not that many for women of color. I mean, 3 out of the 5 panelists mm-hmm. were white, and 2 were white and blonde. And you know, not... It just shows like where we are, even as we pay lip service to all this stuff. It shows you where we are in terms of representation and how it's more nuanced and complex than this idea of like, oh, you know, the field is expanding. And they also talked about the type of roles, right? It's either like the victim or the strong kick-ass woman. And it's hard to find roles in between, right? It's like these women aren't necessarily three-dimensional characters.
I mean, especially in like superhero type comic type stuff, it's like either the mom or the aunt, or you're like the sidekick slash girlfriend slash person who's basically like a Hermione character, right? but cooler, you know,
right?
Or you're like the strong kick-ass person who's very like masculinized except the way you look, like,
right?
It's so frustrating.
Exactly. I mean, the way I always kind of explain this to people who start to disagree with me, I'm like, you know, when you buy Avengers merchandise, you will 9 times out of 10, all of the main Avengers except Black Widow will be on that merch. Like, think about that. She's one of the main 6 Avengers, the only woman, and she is left off of 90% of the merch. And it's, again, it just really shows you, and they only merchandise Black Widow stuff mm-hmm. to girls and women. And you can't really find much boys and men stuff with Black Widow on it. I mean, again, it's just this sort of divide. And you know, what they didn't talk about, but what I talk about a lot too, is that even in the realm of superhero movies, we've got Captain Marvel, we've got Wonder Woman, Black Widow is getting her own movie, and she's been in the Avengers from the beginning, but she never got her own movie before this. Mm-hmm. And all 3 of these women are white. And all 3 of these women are, you know, very much set up to be this sort of, you know, perfect, you know, the perfect woman, right? Like, you can beat misogyny if you are
she's hot and extraordinary, she can lick woman, ass, basically. Right? And that's like a reductive way to describe Wonder Woman, Captain Marvel, and Black Widow, because they're like all amazing characters. They are more complicated than that, but that means like you have
more,
to actually,
and they are more complicated than that. But
the way they are styled in like merchandise and commercials, no one's really paying attention to the writing until you get to the movie, and if you actually care about the about like the story, right? And I think that's what's frustrating about it.
Right. Itself. Yeah. I mean, Captain Marvel, I think, is the first one where she's wearing appropriate armor for her profession, right? She has full body armor. And even when she's not wearing it, she's wearing jeans and a t-shirt and a jacket and sensible shoes. And so, but you don't see that. I mean, even Wonder Woman, her boots have heels on them. Like, you know, and Black Widow, I mean, she wears the cat suits that are zipped down to her belly button. And I mean, again, I love Black Widow. I think she's a great character, but, you know, she is presented very sexualized. And, you know, Captain Marvel is an improvement on that, but it's still very much a sexualization of these sort of roles. And it's difficult, you know, and so it's difficult to say that there's all this diversity and people are really coming around. I mean, I had a friend, we went and saw Captain Marvel together, and the pivotal scene, this is a spoiler, so if you haven't seen Captain Marvel, please see Captain Marvel. But you know, this sort of pivotal scene is where her mentor, they're in like a fight, and he says, don't use your powers, like, prove to me that you can do it without them. And so she shoots him with her photon blasters and goes, I don't have anything to prove to you. And that, I mean, again, that moment in cinema for me, again, as a affluent white woman, was so, I mean, I can't even describe it. It blew me away. And my friend, my male friend was like, yeah, it was kind of anticlimactic, right?
That's
and I was like,
point.
No,
yeah.
That was the climax. Well, but the point is like for women, that is the ultimate battle. I have to prove something to you. I have to prove that I'm good enough to be here. I have to prove that I'm a human before anything else, right? That I'm not a second-class citizen just to get half of the opportunities. And for her to go, fuck you, I don't have to prove anything to you. That was the battle. She won. You know, it's also a reference to, I think it was Captain America 2. He's in this one-on-one fight. And the guy goes, that he's fighting with goes, what, Cap? I thought you were more than a shield. And so Captain America takes the goddamn bait and puts his shield away, which is like, what? Why would you do that? Why would you get rid of your advantage? I mean, again, this is all very like insider baseball on nerd shit. But I mean, I go to Comic-Con every year. So what do you want from me?
But basically, like one of my friends on Twitter, Caitlin Burns, she's a trans journalist. She was pointing out that like even though Marvel has this amazing timeline of movies that are coming out in the next few years, none of them are trans. And again, there is like certain people who are maybe probably don't listen to this show be like, can't you ever be happy, blah, 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 blah. No one cares. Like, I think it's cool that one, like, we should have a trans superhero. I think it's okay. I think it shouldn't matter. And I think we should make an effort to do it because it's important, right? I mean, there's a reason, like, if I can make a really bad comparison to politics, but sort of good. There's a reason Elizabeth Warren, whenever she sees, like, a little girl, she does, like, a pinky promise and goes, I'm running for president because that's what girls do. Like, it's cute as fuck, but also it's really important that people who are not represented in certain roles see people who look like them in those roles, right? Either gender, race, whatever.
Yeah, you can't see it, you can't be it. And, you know, this sort of concept that, you know, while pop culture and media is out, you know, is often taken outside of the realm of politics, you can't separate the two because that's how we as a culture see each other. And that's the first representation most people get. There's also no overtly queer characters in the MCU that I can think of off the top of my head. And
except if you read fan fiction like Steve and Bucky.
Right. Oh, which I do. And I'm a huge Cap Bucky shipper. I will okay.
Same.
Again, I'm gonna spoil some Endgame shit. So if you haven't, just skip ahead to the next section. But in Endgame, Cap goes back in time and is fighting with a like past version of himself, and he's losing. And so modern day Cap says to past Cap, "Bucky's still alive," and past Cap drops everything. And is like, what? And then that's when modern Cap gets the drop on him. Like,
that's so
I'm sorry,
perfect.
If that's not the queerest, if that's not the queerest shit you've ever heard, I don't know what is. They devoted two whole movies to their relationship and them rescuing each other. That's 4 hours of superhero movie that's been dedicated to rescuing each other. Like
the whole time I was just like, now kiss.
Right. Seriously. If y'all need some Cap Bucky fan fiction recommendations, hit me up. I got them. And I'm not even embarrassed by it. But anyway, I mean, and so obviously pop culture is often taken out of the context of politics, but also something that Shore Agdashloo said was she's on the show called The Expanse, which is set in outer space, but it deals with themes of immigration, colonization, discrimination, xenophobia, racism, speciesism is kind of more what it is in kind of sci-fi shows. But, you know, and she was saying she's reading scripts 2 years ago, and then she sees this stuff on the news and she's like, this isn't news to me. This was in my script 2 years ago, you know? But so really, I mean, there are ways to deal with larger cultural issues within these shows. And so it's not important, right? Mm-hmm. And representation really does matter. And I can go on about Comic-Con forever. And maybe we should even do it like a Patreon with some more Comic-Con content, because I could talk about this for fucking ever. I went to some other activations and I have thoughts and feelings on the gender representation in there. So maybe we'll do that. That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
Okay. That would be cool. Anyway, so moving on to something not nearly as light and fun as Comic-Con, because, you know, this is 2019 and we can't have nice things anymore. Can you Varsha, take us through the whole send her back and the jihad squad situation. And I'm using these terms very specifically because it's the way that Trump and the Republican base have presented their ideology. And so I want to use these terms specifically to unpack it.
So basically, this is like, I think a week ago or a week and a half ago at this point, but there was a debate within the House about this immigration bill, right? I'm going to go way back and just talk about the actual Democratic Party for a quick bit. So there's a debate about this immigration bill. Basically, Mitch McConnell had sent this immigration bill, which was going to fund a lot of shit, right? But it didn't include certain things that progressives in the House wanted, specifically progressives like Rashida Tlaib, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and like Ayanna Pressley, right? And basically, one of the main things was not $1 for concentration camps. And there are two sides to this story, right? So the one side is basically what ends up happening is Nancy Pelosi, who's the Speaker of the House, she legitimately says, you don't have enough votes for this version of the House bill. I would rather pass a more moderate version of the House bill and take that to McConnell and get some concessions rather than just pass McConnell's Senate bill and have that tied to Trump, right? But if we take your version, which we don't have enough votes for, and if we take too long up for it, we won't like be able to send that up to McConnell, or we won't be able to get like we won't be able to work with the Senate on this bill. And so she wanted to take a more moderate approach, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, just a more moderate approach on how to actually deal with the concessions they wanted in immigration policy on this bill.
Nancy Pelosi is kind of pissing me off lately.
Yeah, she is. And again, you can agree with it.
And I stand Nancy Pelosi. That's the thing. I can disagree with her. This is something that people don't seem to understand. They're like, oh yeah, Nancy Pelosi, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I can still stand Nancy Pelosi and not like what she's doing here.
I'm in the same boat. We're basically like, I understand exactly Nancy Pelosi's position or leadership's position on this bill, which is they wanted to pass a version in the House as quickly as possible.
Something.
So they could get some concessions from McConnell, but the progressives were holding them back, which means Nancy Pelosi had to negotiate with nothing to McConnell, right? And in the end, they ended up getting nothing, right? And so the House had to end up passing McConnell's version anyway, right? And that's why basically the progressive caucus in the House Democratic Party were a little bit pissed. And then Nancy Pelosi makes a mistake, which is why she's pissing me off a little bit. She gives an interview to Maureen Dowd. No one should read Maureen Dowd.
Yep,
Maureen Dowd shouldn't have a job anymore. But basically, yeah, she gives this interview where she sort of like throws unneeded personal criticism at these four members of the House that I just recently mentioned. And it seemed like a mistake to say that, right? That what she should have said instead was, you know, these certain members wanted a more progressive version of the immigration bill. We certainly should have had that debate on policy, and I'm glad that we did. But in the end, they didn't have the votes, and we went another way. Instead of saying that, she made this like a personal argument of how all they have are tweets and stuff like that. And so in the end, Fox News ends up reporting on this so-called Democrats in disarray, which, I mean, it is a riff with the Democratic Party when like some people want to have a policy debate, other people don't, blah, 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 blah. But the way Fox reported it, Donald Trump sees it. And this is where the first tweet comes in. This is like a week ago, and he basically says, this is where the first racist tweet is, you know, these four congresswomen are not like respectful of America, and they should go back to where they came from and try to fix their horrible countries.
Let's take a detour here for a second and remind everyone that three of the four were born in the United States. Ilhan Omar is a Somalian refugee, and she came here when she was 10 years old, and she is a citizen. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ayanna Pressley were all born in the United States. That's where they're from. And that's where Omar's from, really. Yeah, right? Like this is her country. She's a citizen. This is where she's from.
Yeah, no, I was naturalized in 2017. I'm an American. I would like everyone to suck it. Like,
right. You know? I would like everyone to suck it. Thank you.
Basically, like, so that happened, right? And so he tweeted about, like, they should go back from where they came. And every single Democrat, even Nancy Pelosi and a bunch of Senate Democrats were like, fuck you. This is racist as fuck. Right. And then everyone on Fox and a bunch of Republican senators and basically every Republican was like, no, he wasn't being racist. He was just saying that if you're criticizing America, you should leave. And then like the next day, Donald Trump tweets, I don't have a racist bone in my body. And then he targets out of one out of the four, guess who? Ilhan Omar, because she is the only refugee here.
Right.
And so since then, he's been targeting her and basically saying that, like, she's said anti-Semitic stuff. And again, we've had that discussion already. If you truly believe she said or implied something anti-Semitic when she had that controversy a few months back, she apologized for it very, very deeply and has, like, yeah. made amends. And if you don't believe she said anti-Semitic stuff, she still apologized. Like, she still, like, expressed her actual intentions with her words, and she's done a much better job than any of the racists right. in the Republican Party who are actually anti-Semitic.
Well, and I'm going to take another detour here for a second just on that, because I was talking to another person about this, and we're going to get more deeply into this in our next section when we talk about misogyny and the race in general, like the 2020 race. But women are not allowed to have gaffes, right? They're not allowed to make mistakes. They're not allowed to apologize or put out statements, right? Like, she, you know, well, you know, her saying anti-Semitic things or not, or how she came off, and we're also going to talk about impact versus intent. It doesn't matter, because she's not allowed to clarify her words, right? Women aren't allowed to clarify. If they don't say it perfectly the first time, they get flayed.
Yeah, but basically that's exactly right, right? And Donald Trump is insisting on, like, targeting her because she's a Somalian refugee, and insisting that she has, like, dual loyalty, and that her oath of allegiance to the Constitution, which you do take when you become naturalized. I took that oath. So does she. And she also takes another oath to serve the Constitution, uphold it as well, when she got sworn in for Congress, that she has, like, a dual loyalty, and, like, she's not respectful to Israel and blah, 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 blah. It's really, really disgusting racist shit. And then the criticism turns into people like Stephen Miller and a bunch of other people in the Republican Party being like, if you don't like America, why don't you just leave? Or if you criticize America, you can leave, right? And that is dangerous as fuck.
Well, right, because then it becomes, you have to love America in this certain way. And again, this is something that I talk about all the time, and people are yep. sometimes really shocked when I say, I love this country. I love America, and I am pissed off as hell, and we are fucking up. But yep. in what Stephen Miller's talking about, that means I don't love America in the right way, right? So it doesn't even matter who you
exactly.
are. And ultimately, this is sort of the creep of authoritarianism, or this creep of where you get this. Okay. And again, it applies to this very marginalized group, and it's easy for a lot of people to let it go. Right. Yes. And then, yeah. but then it just expands. It just festers and grows from there. And then there's only one way to love America. And if you deviate from that in the slightest, you are anti-patriotic. You are a traitor. Right. And now we're getting into this traitor, this like, you know, outside of the collective idea. And again, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist and not to sound cliche, this is 1984 shit.
It really is, though, because it evolved into, again, I don't make this analogy lightly, it evolved into, like, fascist level shit at a rally in North Carolina. Right. So Donald Trump is, again, pissing on, like, Ilhan Omar's reputation and just being a racist jerk in front of, like, a huge crowd. And then without prompting from him, the crowd starts chanting, "Send her back, send her back," right? And I posted a thread about this right after Donald Trump's initial tweet, which is like, go back to your country type stuff. Like, I've heard that so many times growing up. It hurts every single fucking time. Even if you know the person is like trying to make this contrarian joke, or if they're actually racist and serious or whatever, it really feels like they're getting at something that's deeply true, that, oh yeah, you don't belong here. And it, like, makes you feel insecure.
Right.
And so when a whole crowd of people is, without prompting, going to start chanting, send her back to a naturalized citizen and a member of Congress, yeah, that is authoritarian as fuck. And then the next day, Donald Trump tried to say that he didn't support the chant and he wasn't a favor of it, but that's bullshit. This is where 1984 comes in, because if you watch the fucking video, he's smiling and he likes it. And then the next day after that, a bunch of Republicans, only like a few of them, are willing to say the words that this was gross or whatever, Donald Trump's tweets and the send her back. But most of them are like, actually, I don't know if send her back is racist, right? I mean, it really is. Like, if you're going to criticize this country, why are you here? And that's what's so scary about it. It's like,
yeah, where are you going to send me, asshole? All I do is criticize this country.
We're literally like, again, I don't mean to make inane historical arguments, but the reason this country, specifically like United States liberal democracy, as much as it exists, is because we led a revolt against our colonial rulers, the UK, against England, specifically for the right to criticize our government, specifically for the right to criticize our government, not just in free speech right. and not just in taxation, but in how we even conduct government. And so this idea that you are going to dismantle 200X years of the First Amendment is bullshit. But on top of that, it's not something that any other Republican president in known history, at least in recent history, except like maybe Nixon and a little bit of Reagan, has actually actively tried to stoke. You know, people, again, this is not a George W. Bush stan podcast, hell no, but there's one thing, a teeny tiny thing that you can respect George W. Bush for, and it's not a lot, is that the day after 9/11, he wasn't going, let's go murder every single Muslim out there, right? He is actually trying to bring the country together, but there's not been a single moment.
Wait, think about how low that bar is.
I know.
Think about it. It couldn't be lower. They fucking dug a ditch in the ground and was like, that's the bar, right? The basic human decency of let's not murder people. Let's not, disparage innocent people. That's where the bar is. Like you said, this is not a Bush stan podcast, right? And I'm not even saying that that's not, something neutral, right? It's not good. It's not bad, but okay. It's neutral. But are you fucking kidding me? That's what we have to go back to. That's what we have to reach back to find something. And again, and Varsha, I do want you to continue, but I do also want to take a second to talk about how he said Trump was like, oh, I didn't condone the chant. So what were these lock her up chants?
Exactly.
Back in 2016 or 2015, really. And again, people are shocked that it's gotten to this. I can't believe that they're chanting at rallies. I'm they've been chanting at rallies for three fucking years, more than that. And he's been the one to bolster that, to start the chants, right? And we're talking about, first we're talking about locking up a political opponent, which is some Russia-level shit. And now we're talking about send her back racist shit. That's not even that's 1984 shit. That's Germany in the 1940s shit.
Oh yeah, no, this is literally Nazi level shit though, because that is what they that is what Nazis, who were the deepest anti-Semites, would accuse Jewish people of. They would say, you are not German. You are not German enough. That is basically Eastern European history of the 20th century is the send her back chant. Is this idea that colonialism and Western power had ravaged these national lines for decades and ruined ethnicities and all this kind of stuff. And so you had all of this strife, and it was rooted in this idea that you are not our ethnicity, you are not our nationality, blah, 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 blah. And so we want to send you out. That is where it comes from. And so this is disgusting. And it's particularly scary because it's not as if sending her back isn't a far away, it won't happen to Ilhan Omar. The way that Trump is targeting her, there is going to be violence. I really am afraid because another really quick story, a Louisiana police officer suggested Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez should be shot. She should be shot for the way that she talks about America and the way that she talks about Donald Trump, basically.
That's violence that's again, we're talking about next level shit here. We are no longer talking about American politics or values but you know what we are. This is not new, right? This is not some out of nowhere revelatory stuff. It's just now they're saying the quiet part out loud. They're making the subtext text, and they're making that text all caps and in bold, and it's even hard to wrap your head around. In addition to violence, I think today, what this dovetails with is there's reports that ICE and immigration are going to start fast-tracking deportations specifically to get around the due process. And due process is going to come back in this show, so stick a pin in that. Get around the due process in the immigration policy. Yep. So again, send her back is not accidental. It's very intentional because of this new rollout of policy that is literally trying to send people
back. Oh, they also have a new asylum policy that just came out on Sunday, which is they're going to try to implement this, which basically says you can't apply for asylum in the United States if you didn't first apply for asylum in the first country you reached after you left your home country, which is physically impossible because in some cases, like Mexico and other countries that you are leaving your country from or going to aren't offering asylum, so you have to go to the United States. So basically, like, right, they are doing whatever they can to literally send people back. But on top of that, there are multiple cases of naturalized citizens, of U.S.-born citizens being mistaken for immigrants by ICE or by CPP, yeah, and literally being deported or literally being detained.
We did a whole story.
Yeah, we did a whole story about this.
There was a whole story. Send her back, this squad. And we're really focusing on Omar, but but it was all four of these women. And again, this ties in, this dovetails with people actually born here, send them back, where it's like three of the four people he's targeting were born here. So send her back specifically to Ilhan Omar, but there's an implication, right, in that it extends to all of these people that he's been criticizing,
and
right?
All of these people, it's not just that they're women. It's specifically that they're women of color, because he right. never says to Nancy Pelosi, go back to Italy. He's never going right. to fucking say that. There are multiple male white members of Congress whose parents are immigrants or who are immigrants themselves. He's never going to say go back to your European country to them, right? So specifically what send her back is about, it's not just about immigration. It is specifically about white Americans, white people right. in general, being afraid of their loss of status in this country. And that is why it is authoritarian, because it is saying, I get the free speech to say, send her back to you. I get the free speech to destroy your security in your country, to destroy the work you've done to become naturalized here, or the work you didn't have to do because you were here. I get to challenge your safety, but you don't get to criticize the country that you are a part of. That is what it is. It's creating second-class citizenship.
Yes. So it's the white supremacy part of the patriarchy, right? Because you can't have one without the other, really. You know, there. And so this is where that kind of intersection is really highlighted. Mm-hmm. Because you said it so perfectly, Varsha. You always say it so perfectly because you're the smartest person I know. But yeah, it's this set creating two different sets of rights, right? What I get to say versus what you get to say, and putting you in your place. And specifically, these are four women of color, says so much about who Donald Trump is afraid of. These are outspoken protesters against Donald Trump. I mean, they're not the only ones, obviously, but they are four relatively young women of color, very young, actually, women of color, openly protesting Trump. And that is who he is most afraid of.
Yep.
That to the point where he is doing everything he can to discredit them and using every tool in his racist ass arsenal to threaten them, not just in an intellectual sense, but in a very physical safety related sense. Like when that police officer in Louisiana literally threatened to shoot a politician.
It's so scary. And what's really frustrating about it is that Donald Trump is the incompetent racist. There are competent racists in the Republican Party. And so literally just today and yesterday, two like really amazing writers published two different pieces on Josh Hawley, who is, I think, currently the youngest senator we've had, because he was born in 1979. He's like 39 years old. This dude is... he is like straight out of Handmaid's Tale, okay? This guy is fucking scary. He basically is making a case for like a theocracy in this country, specifically a theocracy that is segregated by race. Because he had this tweet that was really, really scary about cosmopolitanism. And like it's so clear that Josh Hawley, if we keep going down the path that we are going where the Republican Party is never going to have a reckoning with its actual racism, is never going to try to fix it, we're going to end up with a Republican Party that is willing to elect someone who's even more racist than Donald Trump and more competent to pull off even more horrible things, right? Because he literally said, like, something he tweeted a couple days after this was Josh Hawley tweeted, "You'll have to carry me out on a slab before I compromise my defense of the Jewish people, their greatness, their history, their safety, and the state of Israel." And again, out of context, this sounds like he's just vehemently defending Israel, but why is the senator who is so against cosmopolitanism so obsessed with what Ilhan Omar or other people on the left are saying about Israel is because he has a certain evangelical view of what Israel should be, the role Israel plays in his mindset.
Well, yeah, that's the sort of why is Israel important to evangelicals. And there are a couple of really great articles and tweets that off the top of my head I can't think of, but I will find them and put them out on Twitter, because, you know, people, again, much smarter than I am, have talked about this at length, at how really ultimately the support of Israel is a cover. And yep. Again, and it's an effective cover. Like you said, this is competent racism, right? Because yeah. It's effective cover because pulled out of context, it sounds like, you know, he's inclusive. He wants to protect Jewish people. He wants to protect Israel, right? But when you put it into this larger context, that's not at all what he's saying.
Yeah, because on top of this is, like, first of all, when you read the word cosmopolitan on Josh Hawley's Twitter feed, you are immediately brought to that clip in 30 Rock where Tina Fey just tells, what's his name, Alec Baldwin, where Liz Lemon says, just say Jewish, right? That's like, you're brought to that scene in The West Wing where when this racist evangelical is saying New York values, she means Jewish, right? That's why it's scary. It's like he's not actually defending Israel. He doesn't give a fuck about American Jews. He only gives a fuck about the state of Israel, which is fundamentally different than Jewish people in Israel, than Jewish people in America, than American Jews. They're two different things. The government of Israel and Jewish people in Israel are two different things.
Right. And that's a really important point. And actually, Varsha, can I ask you to take a second to explain cosmopolitanism? Because it's kind of an unusual term.
Yeah. So cosmopolitan basically means that you are, like, literally think of Cosmopolitan the magazine. It literally means that you are someone who is like elite. Right, that you are someone who doesn't have working class values or something. That's what it comes from. But, like, basically, cosmopolitan means that you come from a background where you have, like, many different countries in, like, the way you act. You know, so, like, you right. say, like a really crude example is, like, you say bye in a bunch of different languages, right? Or you speak multiple languages, or you read news from different countries, or you read books in different languages, or whatever. This idea is, like, cosmopolitan city literally means a place that contains people from many different countries. That's what cosmopolitan literally means.
So being anti-cosmopolitan would be being anti this sort of
globalist.
You know, right. It's right. Anti-globalist, anti-heterogeneous. Yeah.
This is literally a nationalist argument. And what's scary right. on top of that is the stuff that Tucker Carlson and Josh Hawley are talking about is they hate big government. They claim to hate big government, right? Except when big government helps them create a social safety net for white people and allows black and brown people and people of color to be on a second level status and women to be on a second level status. They are okay with that type of big government. So they are okay with subsidizing farms in middle America or subsidizing coal miners or putting really high tariffs and then, you know, and screwing with other countries and American trade as long as they're allowed to protect the white male patriarchy in this class. They're okay with socialism, but only for white people. And that's what's so scary about
right.
it. Right. And that's what makes...
Right. Well, that's the intertwining of patriarchy and white supremacy.
Exactly.
Because they apply it very specifically.
Yeah. And that's why this center back shit has to stop now. That's why these cages at the border, like every single immigration, race-related thing, racist thing that Donald Trump has said over the past few years is fundamentally leading up to this moment where Josh Hawley and someone like Tucker Carlson are going to be leading our discussion on race.
Running for president.
Yeah, running for president. And what's really scary is that Josh Hawley is not a fucking, like, you know, reality TV star. Like, he went.
Right. That's what I mean.
Yeah. Like, he, like, is, like, a constitutional lawyer. He is clean cut. Like, he's like Mike Pence with, like, a little bit of a tan. Okay? So it's going to be deeply scary when the new brand of a Republican Party, which is learning everything it can from Donald Trump, learning to lie, learning to even more embolden with its racism, even more sexist, even more, you know, blatant in how they violate American laws and norms. When they take control, it's going to be deeply, deeply frightening. And so that's why you have to watch out for shit like send her back, because it's proof that American people are okay with it.
Well, and that's actually interesting because what basically Donald Trump is doing is he, not just Donald Trump, okay? Donald Trump is sort of the catch-all phrase for this section of this time in Republican politics. But what it's doing, like you said, the Republican Party is learning, right? It's like an AI computer program, or as I like to think of it, a bacteria or a virus. It's mutating. So as you get stronger drugs, it's resisting the stronger drugs because it's mutating, it's learning, it has a life of its own. And that's what's so scary. Again, this is the creep part of it, right? The authoritarianism creep, because it doesn't happen all at once. Because again, organisms, evolution, you know, they're smart. They learn to adapt. And the Republican Party is nimble and they are learning and multiplying like a virus. And, you know, and I think that that is really, really salient right now. And I also just, this is, I want to also point back, kind of drawing, kind of pushing, putting this back to like Comic-Con and pop culture in general. I mean, you just used examples from two very popular TV shows to talk about cosmopolitanism. And that is why this intersection of pop culture and representation is so important. And that has nothing to do with immigration. And I'm not trying to put the two subjects on the same plane. I'm just saying, I think if we notice, if we look, our representation is going to follow politics. So as the Republican Party mutates and becomes sexier, right? Like you said, Josh Hawley, Mike Pence with a tan, clean cut, right? And you're going to see more of that. And then that's going to be something that's looked up to. And then it's going to be a vicious cycle. Again, it's a virus. It's mutating. It's resisting the stronger drugs.
Because like Josh Hawley doesn't just lie about like the really scary shit or tell the truth about the really scary shit. He also lies about stuff that Donald Trump lies about. He got elected to Senate by lying about how he wants to protect pre-existing conditions. But he literally joined the court case that is trying to strike down Obamacare this term. So he is full of shit. And the reason I'm bringing him up in relation to the story is because when he tweets stuff like this, when he makes clear what his vision for Christian theocracy is, what his vision for regulating tech companies is, it's that he's a Republican who doesn't actually believe in the free market or capitalism. He just believes in whatever it takes to make sure that we have a white patriarchal society again in America. And I'm not saying we don't today, but that it's stronger, that there is no way that people who are black, brown, or women are able to take control. And that is what he is most afraid of, just like Donald Trump is most afraid of these four women, right? And it's just, it's so, so scary.
So I want to loop this back to that story in the Washington Post about ICE and immigration. So what they're doing is they are implementing new rules that would literally get around immigration judges and giving authority to pretty much relatively low level ICE officials to deport people without due process. And again, I always think back, one of our first interviews was with Carlos Maza, who's a you know, he makes videos and he knows a lot about media and politics. And the thing that he said with me that still haunts me to this day, I will literally wake up in the middle of the night thinking about this, is he said, they're not going to go storm the Supreme Court all at once. They're going to set up a system in which they storm the Supreme Court and we are happy to let them do it.
Exactly.
And this goes back, right? This sort of zigzagging around due process and giving authority to people that have no business having authority in this sort of debate. And saying, like, at some point it's going to get, you know, it slips so fast where they move the goalposts and it looks okay, and it looks okay, and it looks okay. And then all of a sudden, the rights that they're taking away from black and brown people, from trans people, from LGBTQ people, from immigrants, all of a sudden that's going to seep up like osmosis, right? Starting at the bottom, starting with these easy targets, right? Why ban trans service members, right? Why? Because that's easy. It's easy to sell. And then it creeps up like an ombre or osmosis, where the next tier, where it's maybe a little harder to convince to, like, you know, suppress their rights. But, you know, we've already done it over here. So, like, it's okay. It's still not me. And it's just going to go up and up and up until one day we're happy to let Donald Trump storm the Supreme Court. And we've become a Gilead, which is a Handmaid's Tale reference, type of society.
I mean, like, a great example of this is the women's rights issues that we've seen in the past few years, right? Like, right when Donald Trump took office, I remember I was listening to Sarah and Devin talk about the abstinence-only programs,
right?
And the rise of those and the end of this program that the Obama administration started, which is literally just to study teenage pregnancies and to try to reduce them. And it was wildly successful, but it wasn't funded again.
Right.
That was one. That was the one layer. The next layer was these fucking HHS officials who are trying to prevent migrant teenagers from getting abortions. The next level was the HHS officers keeping track of these periods of keeping track of the periods of these migrant teenagers to make sure they couldn't get an abortion and find out immediately when they're pregnant. The next level was banning birth control when it came to like free coverage or reduced coverage on healthcare. The next level was all these abortion heartbeat bills across the country, right? So at some point, we are happy to say, oh, fine, don't repeal the Hyde Amendment, right? It's literally right. The Overton window. They are able to push the window so far to the right. And that is what Donald Trump has been able to do. Like, he doesn't actually have a real fucking ideology except to be racist. But the one thing that he has been able to do either intentionally or unintentionally is he's been able to push the Republican Party so far to the right to really embolden them to do the stuff that they only thought they could be doing, right? Because under a normal Republican president, if any of these scandals like Wilbur Ross literally defrauding the country or fucking Rick Perry not knowing what he's doing in the Department of Energy, that would have like ensured that Mitch McConnell could not confirm as many judges as he wanted to, right? He would still be confirming a good number, but he would have slowed down. That's what Donald Trump is able to do. He's able to barrel through all of it with no shame. And what Republicans are learning from him is that they don't have to have shame either. And that's where the send her back comes from. And it's so scary, especially with this ICE stuff.
I'm sorry. I was just at Comic-Con. I can't help myself. You know, every single villain origin story it's almost never about ideology. This is in comic books, right? This is in comic books, and I'm talking about like Kingpin and shit from, you know. But it's always, always, always about power. It's about finding the gemstone that will give you ultimate power. It's about becoming the leader and enslaving a people, right? Aliens coming in and enslaving the human race because they want power. And I just, again, I'm not going to analyze this too deeply because this is not the moment for it, because I shouldn't even be talking about comic books and immigration in the same podcast, but like, it always comes back to power. It always comes back to white supremacy. It always comes back to the patriarchy every time, no exceptions. So now I want to take this idea of due process and talk about our next section. I can't believe we're actually getting three sections in, Varsha. We might actually make it too.
I'm so proud of us. Also, if you thought I was angry before about the racism in Josh Hawley's face,
just wait. So there was a piece by
Jane Mayer. She's an amazing reporter. She wrote this great book called Dark Money.
Yeah. Oh,
which is literally about. Yeah.
She wrote Dark Money. Holy shit.
Yeah. She's an amazing New Yorker journalist. So when I wake up super early this morning, right? Because I wake up at like fucking 6 a.m. because I have to go all the way to the archives, which is in another state. I'm in Virginia. It's in Maryland. So I have to catch a train and then a shuttle to get there. And so I'm on the train and I open Twitter and I see Jane Mayer, because I follow her on Twitter. I see her tweet, Al Franken was railroaded. And I see her piece and I'm like, what the fuck? Is this sarcasm? Yeah. And then I read it and I'm like, oh no, fuck you. Specifically, fuck you, Al Franken. And then fuck every single person who went on record in this piece defend Al Franken. So I want to say first,
one of them that went on record I was really surprised by, and I kind of want to dig into this again another time. Tammy Duckworth went on record. I think she was the only female senator to do so.
Current
female senator. So that is something I also want to dive into, but in the pursuit of brevity, let's just skip over that for a second. So Varsha, please take it away.
So basically, if people forget who Al Franken is, he used to be a comedian. He used to also be the senator from Minnesota, right? He was really funny. He was like really short. He was a really big challenge.
Like your weird uncle.
Yeah, he was a really big challenge to the Trump administration. But then it came out, and I think this was in 2017, right?
Yeah,
this was in fall of 2017. Basically, it came out that back when he was a comedian, this woman, Leanne Tweeden, a conservative talk radio host, basically accused him of having forced an unwanted kiss on her, and then also like grabbing her boobs in like a photo, like right. And that was the first accusation. And then like Al Franken was like, I don't remember it the same way, blah, blah, blah. And at that moment, me and a bunch of other women, especially like Devin and Sarah, were like, get the fuck out. Get the fuck out.
Bye.
And a bunch of, and most of the male senators, Democrat and Republican, but mainly Democrat, were like, I mean, he's apologized. This is a little bit different than Donald Trump and, you know, other sexists, because this was like right during the Me Too movement.
Blah, blah,
but
blah.
But then
blah,
seven.
Blah, blah. This was right after Harvey Weinstein, by the way. It was like the month after.
Thing is, I remember this very clearly because the accusations kept rolling in. Then there was an Atlantic piece and then a bunch of other pieces. And in total, 8 women accused him of inappropriate behavior, either like unwanted touching or like groping or like grabbing your ass when you were taking a picture or this forced kissing, right? But the issue with this piece is that Jane Mayer literally spends like 8,000 words explaining Al Franken's feelings and how all of this is the fault of like Leanne Tweeden and then Kirsten Gillibrand. Right, the way it's framed is that it's not explicit. Jane Mayer doesn't like go after these two women. It's just the way that it's framed is from Al Franken's perspective, as if Al Franken's publicist called up the New Yorker and was like, hey, we got to rehabilitate Al Franken's image. He's really depressed because he's a sexist and he doesn't want to apologize. So what are you going to write for us about this? That's what it read like, because there were I was so angry about this. But like,
I was also angry because it was good. Like, from a writing perspective, like the content was shit, but you're right. I mean, like, she's a great writer. She's a great reporter. And so there were moments where I was like, I can see how he'd be sympathetic, right? Because she's writing it so clearly. And I just, the whole thing was disgusting. It made me want to shower.
Because like one thing, one of the quotes that really got me was that Franken, so it goes, despite his current isolation, Franken is recognized nearly everywhere he goes. Good for you, asshole. And he often gets stopped on the street and he says, I can't go anywhere without people reminding me of this, usually with some version of, you shouldn't have resigned. That was a fucking gut punch because there's a huge majority or a huge number of Americans who still think Al Franken resigning was like some secret plot by Kirsten Gillibrand and like the women of the Democratic Party. Bullshit. And then Franken responds, and he usually tends to respond curtly, yup. That just is proof that Al Franken has spent the past almost 2 years not actually trying to be contrite at all. He isn't sorry. Because if you remember his resignation speech, he was from the floor of the Senate. He was basically doing whataboutism from the floor of the Senate. And it was angry. Because what he was saying when he's resigning was, why the fuck is Donald Trump pussy grabber, the president, but I have to resign? And I understand his indignation, but his indignation would have been much more appreciated if he had apologized to any of these 8 women, but actually sincerely apologized, right? And the piece just gets worse because then, like, a bunch of, like, Jane Mayer just finds a bunch of senators, former and current, just be like, yeah, I'll defend Al Franken in a sentence for you. You don't have to pay me. Because fucking Harry Reid is like, it's terrible what happened to him. It was unfair. It took the legs out from under him. He was a very fine senator. He groped 8 women.
Who's a goddamn special? He groped 8 women. Who's the special goddamn snowflake now? You're right. It was 8,000 words about Al Franken's feelings. And you know whose feelings I don't fucking care about? Al fucking Franken's. I don't give a shit. And the other thing here is, so, and what really grabbed me too was not only all of these senators going on record saying this, and they all, by the way, and we'll come back to this in one second, they all mentioned due process, which apparently ICE doesn't need due process, but a guy who gropes 8 women and forcibly kisses one of them totally deserves due process. Sure. Okay. Cool. Well, and then they talk to, well, and then Mayer even says, like, you know, Hannity believed her. Hannity was all like, oh, there's no reason not to believe her. She's so credible, which he would never say that about anyone else.
He didn't say that about Christine Blasey Ford months later.
Nope. Oh, no. He went full-throated after her. Well, the other thing she did was she found a whole bunch of other women who performed on this USO tour that Tweeden was assaulted on. And they all said, oh, I mean, yeah, like she performed this skit and there was one skit where, you know, he grabbed her boobs and she performed that. And so implying, and again, this was 1 month after Harvey Weinstein. So this is particularly salient in the moment and also now, but even in context of the moment. What they're basically saying is, oh, because you consented to something on stage as an actor, then you automatically gave consent off stage. And that, again, harkens back to this Harvey Weinstein, right? When you're talking about acting and performing, and that's not what Harvey Weinstein was about at all. But it does make you, it forces you to think about, like, we didn't believe a lot of these women who were in the entertainment industry, partly because we didn't really, you know, put a lot of stock in that, which, again, not a discussion for today, but also because it's like, oh, well, they do all these other things. Like, you know, there's this trope of, oh, women fuck their way to the top. So, you know, of course, right? There's that. That's the whole idea behind it. And it was actually Rebecca Solnit wrote about this. And I think her quote is something akin to, just because Romeo kisses Juliet on the stage doesn't mean he gets to kiss her off the stage.
I mean, what also really bothered me was like two things, right? So back to this due process thing. Al Franken did get due process in the sense that he wasn't being arrested. He wasn't being thrown in jail. He wasn't being arraigned for a crime. He was being reviewed like a job performance on whether or not he was
credible
to be a senator. And after the first accusation, most of the 99 other senators were like, yeah, he apologized in some way or form or whatever, right? After the second one, more female Democratic senators were like, I'm not sure. After the third one, they had basically put forward, he's insisted on an ethics investigation, right? Senate Ethics Committee. And then, like, a bunch more came out, right? And so when a bunch more came out, Kirsten Gillibrand basically called the way the piece explains it is that it is actually Chuck Schumer who basically pushed Franken out. But the piece makes it seem as if it was all Kirsten Gillibrand's fault. But basically, when the number had reached so high, the female Democratic caucus in the Senate was basically like, you should resign now. And Al Franken at that moment had a choice because he still could have gotten out of this scot-free because, as we know, Kavanaugh did, right? So Al Franken had a choice, and his choice was, I could go through the ethics investigation, which is my due process, or I can listen to Chuck Schumer, who's telling me to get the fuck out. And he decided to give an angry speech and get the fuck out. No one forced him. Kirsten Gillibrand didn't like come to his house or go to the Senate cloakroom and drag him out on Senate steps, like with her big muscles. No one violated his personal space. He violated women's personal spaces, right? And the United States in polls, and specifically the Democratic caucus in the Senate, decided enough was enough. You don't deserve to be a senator anymore. And you know what happened? In the next special election, Minnesota elected a badass woman, Tina Smith, who everyone fucking loves.
And this is the same conversation we have about Biden, right? Like again, like there's degrees of this. Like, oh, he just grabbed a few asses. Like, who cares? Or, oh, Biden just doesn't understand personal space.
That was Al Franken's defense in this article too. It's been 2 years and he's still saying, I'm just a huggy person. Fuck you, Al Franken.
Right. If you can't listen to women who are telling you that what you're doing is unacceptable and to back the fuck up, if you can't do that, you don't deserve to be a senator. And like you said, Varsha, again, you always hit it. He wasn't arrested. Due process is it's a legal term, right? It's about, you know, the justice system, not about a job review. You know, like, it's not about, you know, it came down to he was fired, right? Chuck Schumer was like, get the fuck out. I'm going to let you resign, but get the fuck out. And like that, due process, get the fuck out of here.
And then two more things, quotes by women, really bothered me in this piece. One was by Jess McIntosh, who was his spokesperson in 2007-2010. And she said she was willing to put this quote in the articles. I'm sure Mayer, a good reporter, confirmed this quote. And she was willing to say, I've taken thousands of those photos with him. I've never seen any behavior that was questionable. We were together nonstop, like the only two people staying in a hotel, and nothing happened. I felt completely comfortable. Good for you, Jess McIntosh. He didn't grope you. Congratulations. He groped other women. right? And then Sarah Silverman, a fellow comedian, you know, who probably worked with Al Franken, she said, and this is back, I think back during the period when it was happening, she said, this isn't Kavanaugh, this, it isn't Roy Moore, right? And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't have to be alleged rape for it to be bad. It's still, or pedophilia, it's still bad, right?
Or pedophilia.
Groping is still bad. No one is saying you should go to prison for 20 years for groping, because rapists don't even go to prison for 20 years. No one is saying you should, like, you know, lose your hands. We're saying you shouldn't be have, you shouldn't have a job where a lot of your, a lot of the people who work under you and a lot of people, a lot of your colleagues are women, because it seems for years you have a culture of not being able to take a picture without putting your hands on them. And so it bothered me that these two women were defending him with this defense that happened right when he was being accused as well. Because SNL, when he was being accused in 2017, a bunch of women sent a letter who, like, wrote for SNL and worked for SNL and worked with Al Franken. They all sent a letter, especially the current people too, being like, he never groped us. Good for you.
Right. Oh, good. So you were groped. That doesn't mean other women weren't. My experience, that's kind of like, that's me trying to make, me trying to explain the experience of a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
That is absolute bullshit. And I would smack myself in the face if I tried to do that, right? Saying this never happened to me, using your experience to explain someone else's experience is bullshit.
Yeah. And then another horrible quote from a lawyer, from Deborah Katz, who represented Christine Blasey Ford and other sexual harassment victims. She said, the allegations leveled against Senator Franken did not warrant his forced expulsion from the Senate, particularly given the context in which most of the behavior occurred, which was in his capacity as a comedian. Oh, so when I was in college, I'm allowed to rape people, but now that I'm in law school, I'm not raping people. Therefore, when I apply for a job, as long as I don't rape people in law school, I can keep the job that I applied for after law school. That's not how it fucking works, okay?
That's not how it works.
And then she goes on to say that all offensive behavior should be addressed, but not all offensive behavior warrants the most severe sanction. To treat all allegations the same is not only inappropriate, it feeds into a backlash narrative that men are vulnerable to even frivolous allegations by women. No. You know what feeds into the narrative?
No.
You saying that. You comparing apples to oranges. Because fundamentally, there are two different things happening here. Tomorrow, God forbid, if I go out on the street and somebody attacks me, what I'm going to do, hopefully, is report that person to the police, right? And hopefully the police will catch them and they will go through a criminal procedure where they will decide criminal charges. This is different,
right?
Where this is Kavanaugh, Roy Moore, and Al Franken, who did these three people did three different degrees of bad things. Roy Moore was a fucking pedophile. Kavanaugh allegedly raped Christine Blasey Ford and also did other horrible things. Al Franken groped eight women. Again, three totally different degrees of stuff, but all three of them does not deserve their respective jobs.
Well, right. So that's the thing. The degrees is a criminal thing. All that happened to Al Franken was that he lost his job. He didn't even lose it. He resigned from his job.
It wasn't a forcible expulsion. That's what bothers me.
Yeah.
And then the kicker is what really, it was one of the last few sentences. Franken told me, and this is a quote from Franken, I'm angry at my colleagues who did this. I think they were just trying to get past one bad news cycle. Fuck
what?
You. Your colleagues didn't do this. You did this. And the way Jane Mayer phrases this is what also sickens me. It feels like all of this is happening to Al Franken, even though he is the cause of all of this. No one is the cause of any of this except Al Franken and his decisions. He could still be in office today if he hadn't groped eight women. He could still be in office today if he had apologized better. He could still be in office today if he had apologized better and gone through an ethics review and the bunch of male senators in the Democratic Senate, because there's a lot of male senators, had decided to keep him.
Which they would have, because again, they're more interested in maintaining the patriarchy than anything else. So they would have been like, eh.
Yeah, like even though Republicans had the majority in the Senate, like it wouldn't have benefited them to replace him, because again, Tina Smith won handily, right? Again, like it would have been cool for them to compete in the Senate election, which they ended up losing. But like it really is a crapshoot, right? So this idea that he was forcibly expelled, as if like someone fucking waved a wand and decided to go like Wingardium Leviosa on his ass, or like what's the other, or a stunning spell,
Expelliarmus.
No one was stunning you, man. No one was using magic against you. You chose this of your own free will. And the reason I had an issue with this and why I literally lost my shit is because Lawrence Tribe, who is a respected legal scholar, or at least he fucking used to be, decided to tweet this morning, Kirsten Gillibrand is like opportunistic for what she did to Al Franken. And I was like, fuck you. Because then he said she has a lot to answer for. And I was like, no, she fucking doesn't. She did her job.
Al Franken does.
I'm not, and he was basically like, I don't know if I can forgive Kirsten Gillibrand. I'm like, I don't know if I can forgive Al Franken for not willing to apologize for groping 8 women.
Yeah, or I don't know if I can forgive him for groping 8 women in the first place. Apology be damned, right? Just because you apologize doesn't mean the other person accepts it. You apologize all fucking day. It doesn't really fucking matter if the other person doesn't forgive you. So I don't forgive you for groping them in the first place. Done. And to tie this in quickly, because we're running out of time, but to tie this in quickly, I mean, this is the sort of misogyny that we're facing coming into the 2020 election, coming into these things against Ilhan Omar and the other 3 women that were targeted by Donald Trump. This is the kind of stuff that we're up against. And it's a hill. It's a big fucking hill. And people like Al Franken, this piece itself is indicative of the misogyny. It doesn't even matter what the piece says. The fact that this piece was published says a lot about how we think about women in this country. And, you know, it's disheartening, but that's also why we fight. And that's why we talk about it. And that's why we push forward, you know, because ultimately you have to keep moving. And I'm not saying we need to put this in the past and move on. I'm saying the exact opposite. I'm saying push back against this. Push back at these pieces being published. Go off on Twitter. Email the New Yorker. Be angry. Get angry. Stay angry. And so I think if we segue this into action items a little bit, I would say anger is hard, right? And you can only run off of it for so long. And we talked about things in this episode that are horrific. I mean, we didn't even go into the atrocities that are still happening on the border outside of the expansion of ICE powers to deport people. But, you know, get angry and get angry in public, right? Women aren't supposed to be angry, let alone angry in public. So, like, make some fucking noise. Write some letters. Get really mad and allow yourself to be mad.
What really bothers me about this is that, like, this kind of piece, specifically the framing, is indicative of how women, specifically white women, are willing to sell out other women and all this stuff in order to establish their place in the white patriarchy, right? And that's what bothers me about it. And that's the truth about this piece,
right?
Is that this piece, like so many other white women or so many of the women who were quoted in this piece, the reason they make quotes like the ones they do, either intentionally or either unintentionally, is fundamentally they're trying to cement their position. They don't want to shake the boat. And usually they're white, or usually they're in a status position of power because
it's always about power. It's always about brokering power. And, you know, women are not immune to it. They do not wield it the same way, but you're right. Especially white women. Heidi Heitkamp was another female senator who spoke out, and, you know, white woman, like, they are trying to keep their power, and they will do it at the expense of other women.
Because, I mean, this is, I think is so true in the 2020 coverage itself, right? The way Kamala Harris, Kirsten Gillibrand, Elizabeth Warren, even Amy Klobuchar, even Tulsi Gabbard, even though I'm not fans of them, even Marianne Williamson, like, the way that they're being covered is fundamentally different from the way the men are being covered.
I mean, that's the thing. And so I think the other action item that I would have for this week is connect with your community, especially community of other women, and work on elevating women of color. Focus on elevating women and femmes and non-binary people of color, because that is who we need to be looking to dismantle this white supremacy and this patriarchy. And so connect in those communities, be active, get angry, and get angry in public, which is a big request for this week. I know, but that felt so good, Varsha.
That felt so good.
So good. You know, we're getting back on a regular schedule. We didn't post last week because I was at Comic-Con, but we're going to be posting every week for the foreseeable future. And I know, I'm excited. And Barsha, I know you're hard at work on your research. So, all right, Hellions, thank you so much for sticking with us. Thank you so much for your patience. Connect with us on Twitter at HellbentPod or at Devin Handy or at _Borsha_BenCat or on our Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone. We're very active over there, and it's a good safe space to get angry in public. So until next week, Hellions, remember to raise some hell and remember to practice some self-compassion. Hellbent Podcast is a production of Hellbent Media. It is produced by me, Devin Handy.
And Varsha Venkata Subramanian. You can follow us on social media at Hellbent Pod on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
And you can join our Facebook group, Dickwads Be Gone, at facebook.com/groups/dickwadsbegone.
You can follow me on Twitter at _Varsha_Venkat.
And you can follow me at Devin Handy. Also, remember to subscribe and rate us on iTunes and rate us 5 stars because that's just the rules of feminism. Tune in every Monday and Thursday for an intersectional feminist look and the centering of women's voices and people of color. We look at current events, public policy, and upcoming elections to give you the most incisive look into stories that don't get covered elsewhere.